one body bag or two?
Hello, hello, and welcome everyone to another episode of Tea Time Horror Stories, or Tea Time Horrors, whichever one you like, whatever tickles your fancy. Today it is me again, your host, Sam, with our secondary host, Joe. Want to say hi?
Hello.
And then...
And stop eating the plastic. And don't drink the coffee.
And we have two special guests today. Well, James, who is our returning reaction guy.
Hello.
And we have Freya. For those who don't know who Freya is, and maybe I'll post a picture of her on social media because she is the cutest thing ever alive. She is James's pup. She is...
She's about 18 weeks now, maybe?
A little bit more than that. Maybe she's more. Close to almost 6 months now.
Yeah, that's about right.
She's six almost months. 6 months, and she's a mix between a Labrador and a Great Pyrenees.
Yes.
So she is an adorable puppy, blonde, and very ditzy.
Very ditzy.
Very yes, ditzy.
Very ditzy.
She trips over her own feet all the time, and if her ears were long enough, she'd probably trip over those too.
They're pretty long, though, and very flowy.
They're very flappy.
Flappy, that's the
yes.
word.
Yes. And she's very lanky. She's super lanky. She's super adorable. We've had her for almost 2 months now, actually.
Yeah, she's kind of fun. Was unexpected, but was kind of
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, it was very unexpected.
Very unexpected, because I came down with her and thought it was for us. I was just holding her, and I was like, Joe, Joe. And he was just like, no. Again, as I've mentioned to you guys before, I have an insane amount of animals. I have 8 cats. I have 3 dogs now. I had 4, but unfortunately, one of my dogs did finally pass away. She was 19 years old, so, you know, old age kind of happens. And, you know, it... Yeah, don't trip over my wires.
She's very explorative.
Yeah, she likes doing things that she's not supposed to, and supposed to as well. She's adorable.
She's a puppy.
She's a good dog. So, that being said, we have a huge amount of animals. Those are just my animals. That's not including the animals like my brothers have. Like John, he has his 2 dogs. He has Kyrie and Joan. James has Freya. Hector has Boy and Taka.
He kind of abducted Taka.
Yeah. And then Mom has her crazy amount, and she's also the crazy cat lady.
You know, on a good note, he did help Taka learn to walk again.
But he got to start walking again. Yeah. And that's what
counts. That's the important thing.
Yes. Yeah, that's a little life update. We have a new-ish puppy. Well, she's been with us for almost 2 months now. She's adorable. That's the latest update we have. Oh, and then the picture I have posted of Babes again. She's the one who passed away, unfortunately. Yeah. Anything else new you guys want to share with the world?
I'm drinking Colombian coffee.
We'll get to what you're drinking in a second. But also on some good news as well, James is now on a 45-day diet. Please root him on, because...
It's difficult, man. Like, on a diet is all good, because I look forward to those cheat days.
He's a week and a half in, so that's 10 days down.
And on the other hand, on the same time, I've also quit smoking until then.
Yeah, which is amazing for those... People who don't know, James was an occasional or...
Occasional.
quite occasional.
It was like morning, 1. Lunch, 1. Dinner, 1. After work, all the freaking time.
More like lunch, brunch, seconds dinner, seconds lunch.
I was a hobbit with smoking, yes.
Yes, yes. So he was, I guess you could say he was pretty much a heavy smoker, but not of cigarettes.
No. I was going to bring that up.
Other stuff.
I did smoke cigarettes, though, in college.
The wacky weed, the devil's lettuce.
But it was mainly weed, yeah, it's definitely weed.
Or devil's grass, or however you want to call it.
But I am currently 11 days in, and I am 11 days free of smoking weed, too. I do miss smoking my 16-inch Gandalf pipe.
A 16-inch something, yeah, I know.
Oh my god,
Joe. No homo! I'm not gay. Really? I'm actually very happy, but I'm not gay.
It doesn't matter. We accept you for whoever you are as an individual, because we are LGBTQ friendly.
Yes, we are.
Again, congratulations to James being on his, I don't know, 10th day or 11th day, whatever he has the willpower. I do not. That being said, congratulations to him. And of course, we're going to do another shout out again to my homeboy, Shannon. Shannon, we miss you. Come back to us. Not that he really left or anything. But again, if you guys are into anime and you guys really want to, you know, to hear people talk about anime or go over reviews and whatnot, he has a podcast called Shiitake Podcast.
What was the one he did recently?
He just did Housewives.
Way of the House Husband.
Way of the House Husband, which is on...
Super hilarious.
Oh my god, it is a funny, 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 funny anime that you guys can watch on Netflix on your own free time. They did a review on it. Watch it, listen to the review, see if you agree with them. Again, it's Shiitake Podcast. You can listen to him on any podcast out there. He's really good. His name is Shannon. He's amazing. And Mamats, who talks with him, is pretty cool too. And that being said, James, what are you drinking today?
All right. So this is a little something I'm trying new. It is a Colombian coffee. The brand is... Can I say a brand?
Yeah.
Okay. So the brand is Geek Grind.
Geek Grind.
It is called Dwarven Dawn. Deep Mountain Blend, Medium Dark Roast, and I have to say it's pretty good, actually.
It's gross.
It's actually not bad. I drink my coffee dark, though, so...
And we're not sponsored by them.
No, we're not sponsored.
But, you know, wouldn't be such a bad idea if they hear this. But, yeah, it is from Geek Grind. For Joe's birthday, for those who know, Joe is a huge coffee connoisseur.
Nom, nom, nom.
He loves his coffee and he loves his tea, so for his birthday and for Christmas, I just loaded him up with a bunch of coffee.
About a year and a half's worth of coffee. Yeah. And I am not complaining, but it is super good.
Yeah. So he has that today. You know, it smells okay, but, you know, coming from someone who's not a coffee person. But guess what? I'm drinking coffee.
If you can call it that.
Yeah. It's coffee because it has...
You mean you're drinking creamer.
It's creamer with
a splash of coffee.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, okay. I'll give that to you guys. It is creamer with a splash of coffee because we've had a long week of work. It is insane. We've been getting up at 4 a.m., 5 a.m. on some days and going for like 8 to 10 hours. So it's pretty tiring this week. And today was no exception. So I've decided to dip my toe into coffee.
Some coffee.
Sugar. You're taking a sip of it.
I like sugar.
I do too. I guess it's just it's a family thing.
It lingers
thing.
On the tongue.
It
yes,
does.
That's
it.
Yeah.
So
it's like not enough to make a difference in the diet, but it's just enough to make
I have,
a difference in my tongue.
Technically, it is sweet creamer with a dash. And when I mean a dash, we're talking like 2%. Of this is coffee, and it's the same coffee that Joe's drinking. So, Joe, how about you tell him what it is?
It's called Sin-O-Bun by Bones Coffee. It's actually pretty good, especially when you let it cool just a little bit. You definitely get those notes of cinnamon in there, but overall, it's pretty good coffee. It doesn't show what kind of roast it is, but by the taste of it, I'd say it's about a medium roast. But otherwise, it's pretty damn good. And the artwork that they have for each bag that they have is actually pretty cool. Kind of 1970s-ish, kind of.
I will take a picture of it and I'll put it on the... Yeah.
No, actually,
social media. American tattoo.
Yeah, actually, I might go as far as like 1950s.
There you go.
Yeah, I'll take a picture of it and put it on social media of what we're drinking again. Go get back to that so you guys can see it. Maybe even order from them. Their stuff is actually pretty good. Again, I like it, which is saying something because it's coffee. That's coffee.
That's more of this one. So if you want to take a sip of that one, you can.
Yeah. Probably. So I like it. I like the small little 2% of coffee that I have in there because, again, I have a sweet cream creamer that I have there with just a dash of Cinnabon.
If I had to give a percentage or a ratio of creamer to coffee, I'd probably say it's about 85 to 15. Creamer to coffee ratio.
Yeah, it is but also mine is iced.
She's also having it iced,
yeah,
too.
So there's like half of the cup is ice, and then you put a little bit of the coffee in there, and then I put the creamer in there, so it kind of has almost that watered down taste as well.
The ice part was a bit rushed on my part, so I tried to cool or chill the coffee a little bit before pouring it into her mug. But,
yeah, whenever I have coffee, I prefer coffee cold. I don't like gar chilled. I don't like it hot because I think it's too strong.
Well,
coffee is pretty good too.
The only beverage that I know that you like that's actually hot is either hot cocoa or possibly even cider, like an apple cider type of deal.
I'm picky with apple cider.
Yeah.
I'm very picky, but hot
cocoa is her jam.
Fuck yeah. I have Lucky Charms cocoa over there, man. But the thing is with me...
Wait, cider? Like apple cider?
Hot apple cider. You've never had it before?
You can do that?
Yeah.
I didn't know you could do that.
It looks like we're going to have to do that with you.
Yeah.
45 days from now.
It's mostly a holiday thing.
Yeah,
so,
it's a Christmas thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, but the thing is with me and hot cocoa, it needs to be with milk. I don't know about anyone else out there. We can debate this all you want. When it comes to hot coffee or hot coffee, hot cocoa, it needs to be made with milk.
It has to be a thick, fat coffee, too. Like, thick. Like, yeah. At least whole milk. And that's, like, the lightest.
Yeah, yeah. True story. I'm super picky when it comes to hot chocolate. Like, I don't really like getting hot chocolate.
Did you just eat a cocoa bean?
No, she had a acorn. Oh. Acorn shell, which my cats are bringing in again.
Yeah, it's going to be producing again.
Yeah, so when it comes to hot chocolate, whenever I go to a place like a restaurant or something, they usually make it with water. And to me, I can taste it and it tastes gross to me. So I know when someone makes it with milk because it has a more fuller taste to it than it does with water.
Texture.
Yeah. And of course, you have to load that bitch up with a shit ton of whipped cream. Like whipped cream galore. Like
we're talking mushrooms. Half a mug of hot chocolate and the other half plus a mound of whipped cream on top, too.
I mean, that coffee right there should be with whipped cream, to be honest.
Roughly. We have whipped cream, don't we?
I always have whipped cream.
If you want whipped cream.
Maybe. It'll be good
you
ASMR.
Should go get it.
Well, I'm over here in the corner.
Careful.
I'm getting the whipped cream.
If you didn't hear that, James is getting the whipped cream.
My place is small enough. Literally, it's like three steps away from him to get to my fridge.
It was five. It was a long journey.
We should add sound effects.
A trip to Mordor? Hey, hand that over. I can't really move. The mic is in front of me.
I know. I'm doing it on purpose. Here we go.
We should have sound effects of footsteps.
Oh, this is the best sound ever. We also discovered I had something called misophobia.
That isn't a fear of miso soup, by the way.
No.
Oh, miso soup.
I love miso soup. But apparently I have something called misophobia, which is noises that literally you can't stand. And one of the things that it's a rare condition. I can't take the sound of people slurping, chewing, or eating, like
smacking their lips.
That one too loud?
That's popping.
That's popping. But still, it's like, I just can't. Like, it's been really bothering me lately. Yeah, so, yeah, I have misophobia. Apparently, there are things that really piss me off or really disgust me or mostly piss me off is when I really hear people eating.
Oh, dude, I'm going to do it next game night.
No, please don't.
Loudly.
But that is what we're doing. We're drinking coffee instead of teefee. We're drinking coffee tonight, kofefi versus tea. Alrighty, that being said, shall we get started where we left off?
Yes, but what's that you're snacking on over there?
Oh! He also knows what I want. I'm fat.
Not really. Don't let her tell you that.
I really like sugar, as you guys have heard. Probably like every episode I express my love for sugar. And I swear I'm not diabetic. I'm not even pre-diabetic. Boy. I don't know how. But I have an extreme sweet tooth. And one of the things Joe pointed out, besides putting a mouthful of whipped cream, I also have Funfetti cupcakes. And again, for those who really know me, anything Funfetti, I am all over.
The next episode is Funfetti Murders.
Yeah. Yeah, I love birthday cake. I like anything that's Funfetti. If you ever want to get on my good side, you want to send me anything, fun fucking Fetty. Just it's so yeah. And if you guys just want to love me,
just mail it.
Just mail anything Funfetti to me, and oh god, I love it way too much. So yeah, thank you, Joe, for pointing out the fact that yes, I like sweets. Anyway, so let's get back on it. So besides Joe pointing me out of what I'm eating, no one else is eating, just me. And yet, yes, I'm eating in front of James, who's on a diet.
I got willpower. I'm good.
Some of us has to. All right.
Come on. I quit smoking cold turkey.
Yeah, Dad did the same thing after he's been smoking most of his life.
True story. And I've been smoking since I was 22-ish, 21-ish, around there, maybe a little sooner.
And he's old.
I am not 34. I just turned 34.
Well, your dad's old.
Well, my dad is very old.
That's right. So, again, it is, by the time you guys hear this, it will be May. So, let's again say happy birthday to all our May babies. Yelly, still thinking of you. Happy birthday to you, Yelly. Also a May baby, if I'm not mistaken. Josh is a May baby as well, so happy birthday to you. Oh, happy birthday to Joe's dad. Joe's dad is a Cinco de Mayo birthday, so happy birthday to him. So yeah, happy birthday to all our May babies out there. We have Joe's dad, we have Yelly, who used to be on here with us, we have Josh, I do believe, and anyone else. If I miss anyone else, please let me know, and we'll gladly give you a shout out before the end of May. So yeah, let's get started. If you guys remembered, last week we covered John Wayne Gacy, one of my prolific serial killers out there. Not my, but you know, one of the lovely prolific serial killers out there.
One of the more what is prolific.
What does that mean, prolific?
Kind of like legendary.
Or it could well be known. Well known or infamous or famous.
I think
depending
infamous
on how
is a better word. I think it's more known.
They usually say prolific.
All right.
Prolific.
Let's get back to it. Again, last week we covered the first half of a prolific serial killer, John Wayne Gacy. We learned a little bit about him. We learned his background, his daddy issues. We learned about his two first victims. So I covered a bit about him. So this is going to be the continuation of it, and we're going to cover the rest of it, learn about all his other victims, what happens to him, and so on and so forth. A majority of Gacy's murders were committed between 1976 to 1978. These years he would later refer to as his cruising years. Just 1 month after his divorce, Gacy abducted and murdered 18-year-old Darren Sampson. I'm going to apologize ahead of time. I am really bad with names, especially pronouncing names. So if I really say the name so bad, my apologies.
Dinger for it.
So Darren was last seen in Chicago on April 6, 1976, and about five weeks later, 15-year-old Randall Rafton disappeared walking home from high school. Just hours, Rafton had gone missing. 14-year-old Samuel Septon vanished while walking from his home to his sister's apartment. Both of them were gagged with a cloth, asphyxiated. They were both buried in the same grave in the crawlspace of Gacy's house. Yeah, a lot of these bodies were kind of like stacked on top of each other. Let's see. So on June 3rd, 1976, Gacy killed 17-year-old Michael Bonney. He too was strangled and was buried in the crawlspace next to Samuel and Darren. Just 10 days later, 16-year-old William Carroll was murdered and buried directly beneath Gacy's kitchen. A 16-year-old Minnesota boy named James Hawkins was also taken and murdered with his body later.
Dude, I love that name, James Hawkins. Reminds me of one of my favorite books.
I'm pretty sure I'm not saying his last name right. Hawkinson? Not very good at that. He was thrown in the crawlspace on top of a still unidentified male. This unidentified male was thought to have been murdered between this time, so between June 3rd and so all the time that these bodies were thrown there. So this unidentified male was thought to have been murdered between this time, possibly before James Hawkins. The male had medium dark brown hair.
Unfortunately, that kid's name is going to like change each time you pronounce it.
I'm so bad with names. I can say their first names, no problems, but their last names, why do people have such hard last names? This unidentified male was thought to have been murdered between this time, possibly before James. The male had medium dark brown hair, estimated to have been 23 to 30 years old, and between 5 foot 1 inch to 6 feet. He also has two missing upper front teeth, and the investigators believe he may have worn dentures. Not long later, 17-year-old Rick Johnston, who was last seen alive on August 6, was buried above James Hawkins and the unidentified male. So on July 26, 1976, Gacy employed 18-year-old David Cram. He worked for the company before moving into Gacy's house on August 21st. Reasons are unknown as to why he moved in. The following day, on August 22nd, just one day after moving in, Gacy tricked Cram into wearing a pair of handcuffs while he was inebriated.
Yeah, this coffee's pretty good, Jeff.
Yeah.
Gacy had informed the youth that he had intended to rape him. But Cram, who had spent some time in the army, was able to kick Gacy in the face and freed himself. Still staying and living with Gacy, Exactly 1 month later, Gacy appeared at Cram's bedroom door with the intentions again to try and rape him and said, "Dave, you really don't know who I am. Maybe it would be good if you just give in and give me what I want."
Just go ahead and climb into that hole and on top of those other dead bodies over there.
Seriously, dude.
So, yes.
I could imagine that.
He's like, "Yeah, so, I've done this before, so I'm sorry, you know, just give in."
Right? Like, you're going to say yes regardless. Yeah. So, Cram was able to fight off Gacy one more time. After this, Cram then finally moved out and left PDM all together. But he would work for him on and off occasionally the next 2 years. So he still, you know.
It's like, hey, this guy like viciously beat me and tried to, you know what, let's just say he tried to viciously beat me. But, you know, I stayed with him just a little bit longer and then he did it again.
Yeah, why would he stay in the same house? That doesn't even make sense.
Right, like the very, like he moved in. The very next day, Gacy was like, "Hello. Hi."
But not so nicely.
Yes. And he still stayed for 1 month. Why he stayed, I guess he must have had some sort of circumstances that kept him there.
Right, he must have really needed that house.
I guess so.
I must be the victor. That's why he stayed.
But he stayed there for a month, and then finally when he tried doing it again, he took off. But he still worked with him every so often on and off for 2 years. I guess the pay was that good at the time. So it only took 1 month for Gacy to find another boy to move in, 18-year-old Michael Rossi. Two further unidentified males are estimated to have been killed between August and October of 1976. One was buried directly above William Correll's body, who was murdered on June 13th. Rick Johnston was last seen August 6th, and his body was found buried directly above William Correll's. These two unidentified males were estimated to have been aged between 15 to 24, and both had light brown hair.
Jeez, dude. Yeah.
So he had a type.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He definitely had a type. So on October 24th, 1976, Gacy abducted and killed two teenage friends named Kenneth Parker and Michael Marino. The two youths were last seen outside of a restaurant on Clark Street. Both were strangled and buried in the same grave in the crawl space. Only 2 days later, a 19-year-old PDM employee named William Bundy disappeared after informing his family he was going to a party. Bundy was also strangled and buried in the crawl space.
Don't you think it would be kind of suspicious if all these people from this one PDM company is starting to disappear?
I thought that too. Like, I was just like...
You would think there would be something or someone
right,
playing a
there
finger.
There is a link here, people.
Is this what you're getting back at, where you think he wasn't the only one that was in on the whole situation?
Exactly. That brings me from that thing that I brought up, that maybe he didn't do this alone.
Seriously, it doesn't seem like it. Like, there's so many people who've gone missing. You'd think someone would have made a connection
by then.
There's
so many people who'd gone missing, and then a lot of these people were young, capable men. They worked construction. They knew how to lift things and fight things. Some of these guys were actually trained and had been in the armies and the Marines and the military. And you would think that these people, unless it was multiple people, John Wayne Gacy was a hefty fellow. He was tall and he was quite large.
Unless he was rolling them 20s on them charisma checks. And saying like, "Oh,
he must have gotten his dice might have been loaded."
Yeah, let me show you that trick.
Ow. Yeah, because it was just insane that this link is literally right there, and it was just overlooked every single time.
Yeah,
and I could see that could just go back to bad police work. And back in the 1970s, bad police work was
quite frequent.
Yeah,
everything back then. Like, there's so many times people have looked back at cases that were done in the 1960s, 1970s, 1980s, and they're just like, what the fuck happened at these crime scenes? Like, it was just so bad. Walking on evidence, not wearing gloves, doing all these things. It just was bad.
No, I there's a part that you're gonna get to soon that's I already know about. And I know it's going to frustrate the hell out of James.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah, bad police work frustrates the crap out of me.
But no, this is like bad police work times 1,000.
Mm. Yeah.
We'll get there when
we'll get there when I get there. So.
Corrupted police need to be shot. Just saying.
All right.
Well, it wasn't necessarily that they were corrupt. It was just they weren't.
Good detectives.
Yeah. They didn't have the same processes back then that they do now.
No.
Even now it's still shoddy.
Yeah.
It can be.
All right.
Because people are lazy.
On December 1976, another PDM employee disappeared, 17-year-old Gregory Godzilk. He was Godzilk? Last... G-O-D...
Godzilla?
G-O-D-Z-I-L. Z-I-K. Sorry, Z-I-K. Godzilk.
That sounds German.
Godzilk.
Who knows?
Yeah, Godzilk.
It could even be German... not German. It could be Jewish also. Oh!
So it was Gregory Godzilk was Stop last it. Seen by his girlfriend outside her house after he had driven her home after their date. Godzilk had only worked for PDM for 3 weeks before he disappeared. In the time he worked for PDM, Gacy had him dig trenches in his crawl space. In essence, Gacy had him digging his own grave. Godzik's parents, girlfriend, and older sister contacted Gacy about his disappearance, and Gacy claimed he had ran away from home.
Shrugged it off.
Yes, having indicated to Gacy before he disappeared, he wished to do so, and he was tired of his life back home.
Buried him underneath the.
Just came back from a date with his girlfriend.
Yes.
Yeah, that's so believable.
Yes. So between 1976 and March 1977, Gacy is known to have killed an unidentified young male, estimated to be around 25 years old. His body was buried in the crawl space between the body of a 20-year-old named John Priestage, who was also visiting Chicago and who was killed on March 15th. After the murder of Priestage, Gacy was believed to have murdered one further unidentified youth exhumed from his crawl space. The only information they have on this unidentified young man is that he was the age between 17 and 21 years old, and he had suffered a fracture to his collarbone before he disappeared. A lot of unidentified people still to this day, and we'll get into why they're still unidentified. Sorry. On October 17th, Russell Nelson disappeared. He was last seen in a bar. Nelson died of suffocation and was buried in the crawl space. Less than 4 weeks later, 16-year-old Robert Wench was murdered. Wench, yes. Was murdered and also buried in the crawl space on November 18th.
So he was Wench meat?
That's bad, Joe.
That I know, I'm was sorry, really bad. November 18th, a father of a one-year-old by the name of Tommy Boiling disappeared after leaving another bar in Chicago.
So the father died or the one-year-old
died? So it looks
died?
Like he's changing his shit now. No longer it's people moving in. He's going to bars now?
He's always, yeah. It's his MO is just, it's men.
And plus it's his cruising years too.
Yes.
Cruising time.
Yeah. If you notice, this was mostly done in like almost a 2-year span.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, this was like one after another. He was pretty, like something... He just finally snapped, I'm assuming. So both Wench and Boiling were strangled to death, and they were buried on top of each other. 3 weeks after the murder of Tommy, on December 9th, 19-year-old U.S. Marine named David Talsman disappeared after informing his mother he was to attend a rock concert. Talsman was strangled with a ligature and buried in the crawlspace. On December 30th, 1977, Gacy abducted a 19-year-old student named Robert Donnelly from a bus stop at gunpoint. Again, he's chasing his MO a bit more this time. Gacy drove Donnelly home, raped him, tortured him with various devices, and repeatedly dunked his head into a bathtub filled with water until he passed out. Then he would revive him. Donnelly later testified at Gacy's trial that he was in such pain that he asked Gacy to kill him to get it over with, quote unquote.
He survived?
He was let go.
What the fuck?
Yes, I'm going to cover it. So to Gacy's reply, he says, I am getting there. After several hours of assaulting and torturing the youth, Gacy drove Donnelly to the place that he worked, removed the handcuffs from his wrists, and released him. No one was ever able to get a straight answer from Gacy as to why he let him go. Out of all the people that he had tortured, raped, and killed, he let him go.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Donnelly reported the assault, and Gacy was questioned about it on January 6, 1978. Gacy admitted to having had slave-like sex, aka BDSM, with Donnelly, but insisted everything was consensual. The police believed him, and no charges were filed. Yes. The following month, Gacy killed 19-year-old William Kindred. Kindred. Was the final victim to be buried in Gacy's crawl space, and Gacy began disposing of his victims in the Des Plaines River.
Didn't he bury some in his backyard too?
Yeah, one of his first victims was buried in the backyard underneath his barbecue pit.
Mm.
And then he had one buried underneath.
I love barbecue pits.
And then
killed barbecue pits for me.
And then another one was buried in his garage where he poured cement over them.
I heard about that one. Actually.
Yeah. In March 1978, Gacy lured 26-year-old Jeffrey Ridgenill into his car. Upon entering the car, Jeffrey was chloroformed and driven to Gacy's house, where he was raped, tortured with various instruments, including lit candles, whipped and repeatedly chloroformed until unconscious. Ridgenill was then driven to Lincoln Park, where he was dumped. Another one of his victims that he just let go. And, yeah, it's really weird after doing
all... Is there a description on both of them?
He's getting too confident on his,
yeah, maybe it's, now. He's getting off on the control.
I think that's what it is.
Well, that's, like, I'm pretty sure that's what it was at first.
Psychologically, I think he's thinking,
I think that's what it was.
Away with all this stuff, or maybe, because also you have to think, 1970s, homophobia back in the day.
Was huge.
If you try to go and report it, that's basically admitting that you are gay, and gay people were treated like shit back in the day.
Worse than women.
So yeah, it was really, really, really bad to be openly gay back then. And in fact, if you ever went to a police station and tried to report as a male that you were raped, that made you less of a man. So yeah, and you would actually more likely would be made fun of by the police than actually get help.
Yeah.
Yep. You would be shunned by your community and people would know you.
Yeah. And even like they would say it was your fault that it happened in the beginning with.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So.
That's just some stupid shit.
Yeah, so I think he knew of this, he was aware of this, and he played it. And it really, really sucks to hear that that's what he did, but I'm pretty sure that's the logic behind it. So, he was dumped unconscious but alive. Eventually, he managed to stagger to his girlfriend's apartment. He was later informed that the chloroform had permanently damaged his liver. So all the times that he was chloroformed, forced to come back, chloroformed again, it had permanently damaged his organs.
God damn, how many times did that happen?
Too many times he could not remember. Police were informed of the assault, but did not investigate Gacy.
Because he's a stand-up guy. I mean, how could he?
Ridgenill was able to recall, through chloroform haze of the night, Gacy's car and his house, and was able to identify him through everyone else. Police issued an arrest warrant, but Gacy was arrested on July 15th. He was facing impending trials for just battery charges. So not rape, not anything else, just battery. Gacy later confessed to the police that he had intentionally considered stowing bodies into his attic, but had been worried of the complications from quote-unquote excessive leakage. Therefore, he chose to dispose of his victims off on the I-55 bridge of the Del Plains River in 1978.
So this guy literally ran out of room in his crawl space.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think it's one of the... maybe reasons he got caught.
Possibly.
Yeah. If 5 bodies were disposed of at this location, the Des Plaines River, which was they were only able to locate 4 bodies. Some had thought the 5th body had landed on a passing barge. The first known victim from the I-55 bridge into the Des Plaines Rivers was 20-year-old Timothy O'Rourke, who was killed mid-June. His body was found 6 miles downstream on June 30th. On November 4th, Gacy killed 19-year-old Frank Landingen. His body was found in the Des Plaines Rivers on November 12th. Less than 3 weeks later, on November 24th, 20-year-old James Mazar disappeared after sharing Thanksgiving dinner with his family. His body was found on December 28th. The cause of death of the case of Langingen was certified as suffocation through his own underwear being lodged down his throat, plugging his airway and effectively causing him to drown on his own vomit. On December 11th, 1978, Robert Jerome Peist went missing after leaving his pharmacy job. He had informed his parents he was going to go see Gacy about a job, but never returned. When Peist failed to return home, his family was quick to report him missing, and Gacy was involved. Gacy denied any involvement in the disappearance, and Robert Peist, and repeated that he did not offer a job to the youth. So, the Des Plaines police were convinced Gacy was behind. So this is when they finally started to suspect shit. The Des Plaines police were convinced Gacy was behind Priest's disappearance and checked Gacy's record, discovering that he had an outstanding battery charge against him in Chicago. And he had served prison time in Iowa for his sodomy of a 15-year-old boy. A search of Gacy's home on December 13th was ordered by a judge as the request of detectives and turned up several suspicious items.
And the trophies.
A 1975 Maine West High School ring engraved with the initials JAS, which was a victim's initials. Various driver's license, handcuffs, a 2x4 with holes drilled into the end, books of homosexuality, and I guess you can say back at the time, child pornography. A syringe, male clothing too small to fit Gacy, a 6mm Beretta starter pistol, and a photo receipt from a pharmacy where Robert Priest worked at as well. So that kind of put him in the same general vicinity as him. So he can't say that he's never met him before. Police also decided to confiscate Gacy's Oldsmobile along with other PDM vehicles and assigned 2-man surveillance teams that followed Gacy everywhere. While they were continuing their investigation, Gacy the following day, investigators received a phone call from Michael Rossi, who informed the investigators that both Gregory Godzilk disappeared and the fact that another PDM employee, Charlie's Hootala, had been found drowned in the Illinois River the previous year. So basically, they're finally starting to piece together.
I wonder who was in charge of the cases before.
Really bad detectives.
Seriously.
On December 15th, Des Plaines investigators obtained further details on Gacy's battery charge. So you have to think, the Des Plaines police are different from the Chicago PD. At that time, they didn't have computers. So they had to go to each other's precincts in order to get any information.
When did the internet get made? What year was that? Was it the 80s?
80s. And then you also have to think, a lot of this time, a lot of that stuff wasn't computerized and wasn't put into computers until like the 1990s, probably.
Right.
So that being said, though, a lot of at this time, also, precincts did not like sharing their cases with other precincts because it was kind of like an honorary thing. Like, there's no...
It was a jurisdiction type of thing.
Not just that it was jurisdiction type of thing. It was just like...
Pride.
This is my case. This is my my pride and joy and stuff like that. And they didn't want to share it or have someone else solve their own shit, even if they were being incompetent. So, on December 15th, Des Plaines investigators obtained further details about Gacy's battery charge, learning that Jeffrey Regnall had reported that Gacy had lured him into his car, chloroformed him, raped him, and dumped him with severe chest and facial burns and rectal bleeding in Lincoln Park the following morning. On December 19th, investigators began compiling evidence for a second search warrant of Gacy's house. On December 19th, Gacy invited 2 of the surveillance detectives inside his house. On this occasion, as one officer detained or distracted Gacy with conversation, another officer walked into Gacy's bathroom. While flushing Gacy's toilet, the officer noticed a smell he suspected could be that of rotting corpses emitting from his heating duct. The officer who previously searched Gacy's house had failed to notice this on the occasion that the house had been cold.
There was the eye rolly bit.
Yes.
They had investigated his house prior.
Yeah. They had actually had a search warrant to try to find items from other things, and they didn't smell anything, and they didn't even bother checking his crawl space, nothing. And it wasn't until these guys came in, he used the restroom, the heater was going, is when he smelled the familiar smell of corpses. Yeah.
That guy's house must have stunk.
Yeah. Yeah. To say the least. So on the evening of December 20th, Gacy drove to his lawyer's office. Gacy appeared disheveled and immediately started drinking. When asked why he was there, he picked up a copy of the newspaper and pointed to the front page that covered the disappearance of Robert Peist. And he informed the lawyer, quote, "This boy is dead. He's in the river," end quote. Over the following hours, Gacy gave a rambling confession that ran for hours. He admitted most of the bodies was buried in his crawlspace and others were in the Des Plaines rivers. Some victims he referred to by their names, most he dismissed as male prostitutes, hustlers, or liars, whom he just wanted to show his quote-unquote rope trick to. On other occasions, Gacy would claim he would wake up and find dead, strangled kids on his floor with his handcuffs behind their back.
Okay.
Gacy eventually fell asleep in mid-confession, and his lawyer immediately arranged a psychiatric appointment on Gacy. Gacy woke up, and when his lawyer told him what had happened, Gacy shook it off as if nothing had happened. So, and then Gacy's lawyer told what happened. He shook it off, ignoring his lawyer's advice. He left the office. He said this to his lawyer. Also, on top of that, they couldn't take his confession at that time, because he was drunk. One of the things that is in law You cannot take confessions or confessions from people seriously if they are under the influence of anything that can alter their psyche.
I wonder if Wayne knew that. That's why he would start drinking right off the bat.
Yeah. And I think he kind of knew that he was in shit creek. I think he kind of finally figured out that they were catching on to him. So, yeah. So what his confession happened on that day technically cannot be submitted in courts because, one, his Miranda rights were never read to him. And two, he was under the influence. So therefore, that confession that he gave to his lawyer could really just be him talking out of his ass. Yeah. Could be him bragging even. And remember, the defense team is to prove someone not guilty without a shadow of a doubt. And regardless, even if that person is guilty, they still need to try and seek the lesser punishment and to try and make their client seem like human beings instead of monsters that they are. Let's see. So Gacy's last day of freedom was a large blur to him. And it was this day that the warrant to search his house came through. Afraid Gacy would commit suicide, police arrest him upon charges of possession of marijuana. At 4:30 p.m., April 21st, the warrant was granted by Judge Marvin J. Peters. Armed with a signed search warrant, police and evidence technicians quickly drove to Gacy's house. Upon their arrival, officers found that Gacy had unplugged his sump pump and the crawl space was flooded with water.
Oh, gross.
Yes. To clear the water, they simply replaced the plug and waited for the water to drain. After they had done so, an evidence technician entered the 28 by 38 foot crawl space, crawled to the southwest end, and began digging. Within seconds, they uncovered putrefied flesh and human arm bone. The tech immediately shouted to the investigators that they could charge Gacy with murder. He also added, quote, "I think this place is full of kids," end quote. After being informed that the police had found human remains in his crawl space, he would now face murder charges. Gacy offered to clear the air. On December 22nd, Gacy confessed to police that since 1972, he had committed 25 to 30 murders, all whom he falsely claimed were teenage male runaways or male prostitutes. Once back at Gacy's house, the victims had been handcuffed or otherwise bounded, then sexually assaulted and tortured. To muffle his victims' screams, Gacy would often stick cloth rags or items of the victims' own clothing in their mouth. Some victims had been partially drowned in his bathtub before they were revived, enabling Gacy to continue his prolonged assaults. Many of his victims had been strangled with a tourniquet, which Gacy referred to as his rope trick. The victims had convulsed for an hour or two after the rope trick before dying. With only two exceptions, all victims had died between 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. This is all his confessions. Gacy would periodically pour quick lime to hasten the decomposure of the bodies. On January 1979, he had planned to further conceal the corpse by covering the entire crawl space with concrete. Accompanied by police, Gacy returned to his house on December 22nd and showed the police the location in his garage where he had buried Bulvetnik's body, one of his first victims. The police then drove to the spot on the I-55 bridge from which he had thrown the bodies of Peist and four of other victims. Between December 22nd and 29th of 1978, 27 bodies were recovered from Gacy's property. 20 of six were found buried in his crawlspace, with one additional victim, John Bolznik, being found buried beneath the concrete floor of his garage. Three additional bodies, which had been found in the nearby Des Plaines rivers between June and December 1978, were also confirmed to have been victims of Gacy as well.
God damn.
Yes.
And no cop caught on to that?
He was a busy person.
Yes, he was. Several bodies unearthed at Gacy's property were found with plaster over their heads or upper torsos. In addition, several of the bodies were found with ligatures used to strangle them still knotted around their necks. In other instances, cloth gags were found lodged deep in the victim's throat, leading medical examiners to conclude that 12 victims buried died not of strangulation, but of asphyxiation. In some cases, bodies were found with foreign objects such as bottles lodged in their pelvic regions.
Up their butt?
Yes. Yep. Foreign bottles? Object. Yes.
God,
or other stuff. The position which indicated the items had been thrusted up the victim's rectum. All of the victims discovered at 8213 Summerdale were all in advanced stages of decomposition, and the only way to identify them were through dental records.
Fuck.
On April 9th, 1979, a decomposed body was discovered entangled in exposed roots on the edge of the Des Plaines River. The body was identified via dental records as being that of Robert Peist. An autopsy revealed that three wads of paper-like material had been shoved down his throat while he was alive, causing him to die of suffocation. The youngest of Gacy's victims was Samuel Stepson and Michael Mayroon. M-A-R-I-I-N-O. Sorry, I'm really bad at pronouncing last names. This is where I want you guys to guess. Guess how old these two victims were.
16?
I did mention their names and their ages earlier.
I think it was
16.
Joe? Oh, you want me to actually guess?
Yes.
15.
Close, 14.
What the fuck,
yes,
man?
Both victims were 14 years old, and I want you now, guys, to guess who was the oldest.
I forgot the name, so.
Well, the oldest in age. How old do you think was the oldest one that he was a victim of his?
18.
19. I think I remember hearing a 19.
His oldest victim was Russell Nelson, 21.
21.
So he was between the ages of 14 and 21 were his victims. Unless the unidentified males say otherwise, because they have never been identified, so they don't know the actual ages of them.
Only so, estimations.
Yes. So out of the 27 victims found in the crawl space, let's take another guess. How many of them do you think were identified and others were not?
You said this before.
Mm-hmm.
Pop quiz, James fails.
I said a lot of them. I'm like, this one's unidentified, this one's unidentified. So try to think, how many times did I say they were unidentified?
So the question is,
how many are unidentified?
I think nine? No. Yeah, nine. I'm going to go with nine.
What do you think, Joe?
I'm going to say a little more than half.
Six of them. Only six of them were unidentified. Have not been identified. So Gacy was brought to trial on February 6, 1980, charged with 33 murders. At the request of his defense counselor, Gacy...
Is this house still up, or this house?
It was torn down.
Good.
It was torn down, but rebuilt on. And then rebuilt
upon.
Yes.
Burn the landscape.
Yes. Yeah,
Drop a bomb on it. Nuke it.
All right, so Gacy was brought to trial on February 6, 1980, charged with 33 murders. At the request of his defense counsel, Gacy had spent over 300 hours in the year before the trial with doctors, where he underwent a variety of psychological tests, and a panel of psychiatrists determined whether he was mentally competent to stand trial. Because legally, by law, here in the United States, if you are not considered mentally competent, you cannot sentence a mentally challenged individual.
I plead the fifth.
So if someone is insane, or...
Mentally capable of committing the crime, but not mentally capable of being sentenced?
Well,
that's fucking retarded.
It's not that they were mentally capable of committing the crime. You can not have a mental, like a really... imbalanced. So basically it's a chemical imbalance in the brain that could have caused him to do this, so he wasn't able to tell the difference from right and wrong.
33.
So Gacy had attempted to convince the doctors that he suffered from MPD, which is multi-personality disorder, like my D&D character. His lawyer opted to have Gacy plead not guilty for reason of insanity to charges against him, because if you are considered insane, you cannot be sentenced to death. You can still go to prison, but you can't be sentenced to death. You can't legally sentence someone to death if they are not mentally able
to
understand.
The hell I can't? Give me a bet.
Right. So again, let's see. So three psychologist experts appearing for the defense of Gacy's trial testified they found Gacy to be a paranoid schizophrenic with multi-personality disorder. While the prosecutors presented a case that indicated Gacy was sane and in full control of his actions. To support this, they produced several witnesses to testify to the premeditation of Gacy's actions and the effort he went into in order to escape detection. They always say if someone is mentally unable to know the difference of this being bad or wrong, they would not be able to, all this stuff would have been random murders.
And he probably would have thrown on his front yard.
Yeah.
Versus and him hiding and burying
them. Hiding and burying them, showing rope tricks, doing all these things that were intentional and they were planned.
Yeah.
So... anything that has premeditation to it, there's no way you can be plain of insanity. Like, right. There's just no way. You thought about it way too much for it to not be considered something carefully thought of.
Gotcha.
So they have to really, in order to get like the highest punishment possible, has to have premeditation to it. meaning that it was planned. Those doctors refute the defense doctor's claim of multi-personality and insanity. Two witnesses also testified were PDM employees who confessed Gacy had made them dig trenches in the crawl space. One of the employees, David Cram, testified that in August 1977, Gacy had marked a location in the crawl space with sticks and told him to dig a trench there. This showed premeditation and therefore not an act of insanity. He planned to have his whole, like, basement planned out to know where he knew he was disposing of those
bodies. There was no insanity there. I knew what he was doing.
Yeah. So on February 18th, Dr. Robert Steen, a medical examiner who supervised the exhumation of victims' bodies, testified as to how he and his colleagues had conducted the recovery of the remains. Dean stated that the excavation was considered more as an... I can't say this word.
You're a big girl. Spell it out. Pronounce it. Spell it out. Sound it out.
A-E-I-O-U.
What is Indiana Jones?
He's an archaeologist.
There you go. An archaeological dig.
Archaeological dig.
There.
There you go.
Oh my god, I'm so
the
bad.
Big boy in the room got it.
So the bodies were more, it was more as an archaeological dig, adding that all the bodies recovered were severely decomposed, putrefied, and they were just nothing but skeletal remains. In relation to the cause of death of each victim, Steen stated that he had concluded that 13 victims had died of asphyxiation. So they died slowly.
Yeah.
Six had died of ligature strangulation, one victim multiple stab wounds to the chest, which was the one that was making him breakfast. And Steen testified that the cause of death in 10 cases could not be determined. That's how badly decomposed they were, but they were all ruled as homicide. Upon cross-examination, Gacy's defense team attempted to raise the possibility that all 33 murders were accidental erotic asphyxiation deaths.
Horseshit.
Right. This did not hold very well in court.
That's so stupid.
So how can you just be like, oops, 33 times.
Oh, it happened again.
Like, I shouldn't be laughing at it, but I'm just laughing at the stupidity of that. Yeah,
that's what that is.
Like, it's just laughing.
The desperation is what it is, right. Too.
It's like, how low can a defense attorney go when it's like, well, 33 times of accidental erotic asphyxiation... My bad.
Again, I don't get defense attorneys.
Wait, suffocating someone until they pass out is a bad thing?
It's like kissing MacGruber.
That's just wrong.
Yes. I mean, honestly, to me, that's like a slap in the face to the victim's the victim's family.
Yeah, continuously coming up with excuses.
To justify.
Yeah.
So he's just trying to postpone his. He got killed, right? Or was he sent to the death?
We'll get to that.
Yeah. Oh, I was about to give you the answer to that, but...
So, on March 11th, 1980, the final argument from both sides of the attorney began, with arguments concluding on the following day. On the morning of March 12th, 1980, arguments continued. The prosecuting team referred to the defense of insanity as a sham, arguing that the facts of the case demonstrated Gacy's ability to think logically and to control his actions were there. He's a completely sane individual. They also referred to the testimony of a doctor who had examined Gacy in 1968. The doctor had diagnosed Gacy with antisocial personality. Remember when he did the whole rape thing? And yeah, Gacy was deemed capable of committing these crimes without remorse.
I would sure hope so.
So
I mean,
we can edit that.
No, I mean, as
they deemed
in,
him sane. Yeah. Basically. Yeah. You would hope that they would. Okay. So the jury deliberated for less than 2 hours. Less than 2 hours. And found Gacy guilty of 33 counts, charges of murder for which he had been.
His face was like,
huh? What?
That's
what?
Impossible.
What? Yeah.
Actually, I've.
And I would have gotten away with it too if it weren't for those meddling
kids. I've
seen
all. The interviews that Gacy has ever done, because there's recording out there, as you can see his interviews and stuff like that. This guy genuinely believes that he's innocent.
Ugh.
Up until his death, when he finally did some confessions, that's when he also threw out the, that's when he started saying that there were other people there as well.
Claiming that there were more than 33.
No. More, not just more than 33 victim, that he wasn't alone in this.
Okay.
So.
No, that's just him. I don't know. To be honest, that just sounds like him trying to be like, wasn't completely my fault.
Yeah. Remember, he does also have that thing where he can't completely take the blame and he's always
sociopath,
victim.
Sociopath, right?
That's what sociopath. He also has antisocial disorder and stuff like that. He cannot take the full blame on himself, and he always has to put the blame on somebody else. So that's what one thing people refute the idea of there possibly being more people. But I'll get into that a little bit later because there's actual evidence that there could be more people. So let's see. So the jury deliberated for less than 2 hours and found Gacy guilty of 33 counts or charges of murder for which he had been brought to trial. He was also found guilty of sexual assault, taking indecent liberties with a child. Both convictions are referred to were Robert Pice. The jury deliberated for additional 2 hours before they returned with the decision in the sentencing phase of his trial. Gacy was sentenced to death for 12 counts of murder, which the prosecution had sought this penalty. The initiated death of execution was sent June 2nd, 1980.
Yeah.
So.
By what?
Huh?
How did he die by?
A chair.
No.
It was
injection?
I'll get there.
Was he strangled?
I'll get there.
He deserves to be strangled.
So, upon being sentenced, Gacy was transferred to Merid Correctional Center in Chester, Illinois, which he remained incarcerated on death row for 14 years. Isolated in his prisoner cell, Gacy began to paint. The subject Gacy painted varied through. Many were clowns. Some were depictions of himself as Pogo. Many of his paintings have been displayed at expeditions. Others have been sold at various auctions, with individual prices ranging from $200 to $100,000. I've actually seen a lot of his paintings. They're not that bad.
They need to be burned.
Although Gacy was permitted to earn money from his sales of his paintings until 1985, he claimed his work was intended to bring joy into people's lives. On the morning of May 9th, 1994, so remember, he was supposed to die on June 2nd, 1980. On May 9th, 1994, Gacy was transferred from Madrid Correctional Center to State Villa Correctional Center in Christ Hill to be executed. So he managed to extend, because as inmates, you have the right to parole, or not parole, but you have the right to...
Even if he's on the death penalty?
Even if you're on the death, but they have the right to appeal they have three appeals and other things that they can do to prolong to try and overturn their shit.
Okay.
So, and this is where he had tried several times to appeal for his thing, because he was trying to throw evidence that he wasn't the only one. And I don't know if I written it down, but we'll go over it in a bit if I didn't write it down. And I want to go over that theory just a little bit more of why there could have been more than one person. Before the execution began, the chemicals used to perform the execution unexpectedly solidified. So he was supposed to get killed by lethal injection. It clogged his IV tubes, administering the chemical into Gacy's arm and complicating the execution procedures. Binds covering the rooms... so they covered the blinds because people can go and witness people being executed.
Yeah, I know.
Usually it's the family members or whoever they invite over so they can see this. They had to close the blinds, and it took them 10 minutes to reopen the blinds and fix the issue of the clogging and everything in the IV. The entire process took 18 minutes when it usually only takes 5 minutes to do. Anesthesiologists blamed the problem on inexperience of prison officials who were conducting the execution, stating that if correct execution procedures had been followed, the complication would never have occurred. Still, William Knuckle said he got a much easier death than any of his other victims. So it is supposedly rumored he did not die very peacefully because of complications of the lethal injection.
So he suffered a lot.
Not entirely. So according to public records, Gacy was diagnosed as a psychopath who did not express any remorse for his crimes. His final statement to his lawyer before his execution was that killing him would not compensate for the loss of others and that the state was murdering him. His final words spoken before he was given the lethal injection was, "Kiss my ass."
Yep.
Also, one thing that is to be known, so whenever someone gets executed, they're given one final meal. His final meal was KFC. Yes. In the hours leading to Gacy's execution, a crowd estimated to be over 1,000 gathered outside of the correction center, the majority of whom were vocally in favor of his execution, although a number of anti-death penalty protesters were also there. Those wanting him to die wore t-shirts with Pogo the Clown on it saying "No tears for the clown," cheered until his death, and some people bought his work and actually set it on fire there too as well. Good. While the anti-deathers protested, observed in silent candlelight vigils.
No tears for the clown? Believe me, I ain't shedding no damn tears for that fuck.
So on only 27 of Gacy's victims were ever conclusively identified. By the time Gacy's trial, 22 victims had been identified. Some more of his victims had been identified. On March 1980, two further bodies unearthed in Gacy's crawlspace were identified via dental and radiology records as those as Kenneth Parker and Michael Monroe. Monroe, both reported missing on October 25th, 1976, and day after they had disappeared. On May 1986, the ninth victim exhumed from Gacy's crawlspace was identified as Timothy Jack McCoy. Gacy's first victim, one further victim was identified on November 2011 through DNA testing as William George Bundy, a 19-year-old construction worker who was last seen by his family on his way to a party on October 26, 1976.
No relation to Teddy.
Nope. Bundy had apparently worked for Gacy before he was murdered. Shortly after Gacy's arrest, his family had contacted Bundy's dentist in hope of submitting his dental records for comparison with the unidentified bodies. However, the records had been destroyed after the dentist had retired. A second victim was identified through DNA testing on July 2017 as 16-year-old St. Paul from Minnesota, St. Paul, Minnesota, named James Hakenson, who was last known to have contacted his family on August 5th, 1976. Six victims to this day remain unidentified, with five who have been buried beneath Gacy's, who were buried underneath Gacy's crawlspace. One additional youth buried approximately 15 feet from his barbecue pit in the background. So there's still, to this day, five that have not been identified. Based on Gacy's confession, information related to these victims were buried in his crawlspace. Relative to Gacy's identified victims and forensic analysts, police were able to determine that most likely dates of these, so they were able to get estimated dates of when they died and estimated of how they may have looked, but to this day, no one has claimed them and they have not been able to identify them. Again, at the time, if like someone's son came out as gay, they were more likely to be forgotten. At the time of Gacy's arrest, he had claimed to do both dust planes and Chicago investigators that the total number of victims he had killed could have been higher than 45. Jesus. However, only 22 bodies were ever found which were linked to Gacy. Investigators did excavate the grounds of his properties where he had exposed clay beneath the foundations, yet only 29 bodies were found beyond his property. So when asked as to whether there were more victims, Gacy simply stated, "That's for you guys to find out."
Looks like at the very end, he was starting to like...
panic.
No, well, I don't know. It sounds like he's more like coming out of the closet, revealing that he knows it's his fault and, hey, I'm an ass and I don't give a shit.
Yeah. I think, honestly, in my opinion, I think there's more victims. I think there's a lot more victims.
Good coffee.
One of the first things Gacy told investigators after his arrest was that he had not acted alone in several of the murders and questioned whether individuals he referred to as his associates had also been arrested. He had asked this multiple times during his confessions and whatnot, too. When questioned as to whether these individuals had participated directly or indirectly for the killing, Gacy replied, "Directly." Criminal defense attorneys and investigators researching the possibility Gacy had not acted alone in several of the murders have stated that there is overwhelming evidence Gacy worked with an accomplice. So...
You know, he did let a couple people go. What if those people he let go used to work with him?
Which, not the people who were let go. Actually, there had been testimony. The guy who was like chloroformed and put. So this is I did not write it, but I remember reading it, and this like blew my mind. The guy who was chloroformed multiple times, he remember coming to and seeing someone other than Gacy in front of him. He reported that and even said that in court. The other guy who was, like, submerged in the bathtub, remember seeing Gacy laughing in front of him while someone else was dumping his head in the water.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So the two people who were let go had statements saying that there were multiple people there, but were unable to identify them.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that supports the claim that there were more people.
I wonder if they can reopen the case or if they ever thought about reopening
the case. I don't think so.
I mean, the guy is dead. We understand that. I don't think you can... get him for anything else, especially now.
But yeah, and I don't think they'll ever open the case. I don't think they're ever even looking at it. And I think they were just happy that they caught him. But the other people, I mean, you also have to think, this just goes into the whole conspiracy theory of politicians. and not being clean. He was in JC's. I remember in the JC's, they had a lot of shady things happening with drugs and sex and wife exchanges and stuff like that. So it made you think, how far was he into, how deep was he into this to have other people who were helping him? There was so many, so much evidence and witnesses that stated that there were other people, but they just never looked into it.
Right.
I think they just wanted their scapegoat in one person and did not want the other people involved as well. That being said, in popular culture, John Wayne Gacy has inspired many books and movies and shows, most notably Stephen King's It. Stephen King once mentioned that he took some information and based the creature It in some aspects of John Wayne Gacy. Gacy's artwork and some personal items are up for sale, going anywhere from $200 to $50,000 for some paintings and items that once belonged to him, including his...
If I had $1 million, like if I was a millionaire, I'd be buying all his shit just to set it on fire.
You know Korn, right? The main singer? Mm-hmm. He collects serial killer memorabilia. He actually has the Doom Buggy, doesn't have it anymore, of Ted Bundy's car. Honestly, I would totally fangasm if I ever got serial killer memorabilia. Keyboard player named himself Madonna Wayne Gacy. Madonna after the singer, and Wayne Gacy because he wanted to take Wayne Gacy's name. He preferred being called Pogo the Clown, stating it made him feel closer to the killer. He was the keyboard player from 1989 to 2007. He left the band on bad terms. He filed a lawsuit against Manson for unpaid partnership proceedings. And so there are a lot of people out there who idolize him. People who get tattoos and stuff of him. That's something I will never go that far. But yeah, so that is John Wayne Gacy.
The Gacy.
So yeah, I mean, he was a guy who went after boys and buried them all in his house, got too confident, got too ahead of himself, and got caught.
Imagine if that guy bought another house.
Well, he did have a lot of property, and he did work construction, so that's why they were saying maybe he has more victims buried underneath where he did construction.
Yipe.
Yeah. My personal opinion, I think there's way more than 33 victims. I think he honestly has victims anywhere between in the 40s, 50s, maybe even 60s.
And they tore down the house?
Yeah.
Do you know why they tore it down? They just tore it down.
Well, no one was going to buy it.
Well, that's for damn sure.
So they tore it down and changed the address. I mean, when they sell
I can only imagine the haunted house movie.
But that's the thing. When they sell the house, they can sell it as it's never had anyone die in the house. Because the house that originally was there was torn down. So in the new house, technically speaking, no one died there.
It's not a lie.
It's not a lie. Realtors can get away with saying that.
Yeah.
But if they ask if bodies were buried there,
yeah,
different story.
After guys.
I know, right? This was buried over an Indian burial ground. Okay. But remember how earlier we were talking and we were going over serial killers? How many are in... Who has the state that has the most? Did you remember?
California.
Yeah. California, our lovely golden state that we live in right now, has the most serial killers on record. Let's take a guess.
I said about 100.
Joe, what do you think?
Did you say higher or lower after the 100?
I'm not going to say. You have to guess.
I'm going to go a little bit more towards the 50-ish area.
Both of you are wrong.
Well, yeah.
By far. 1,628.
Serial killers?
Yes.
Is it that many people?
Yes.
Fuck.
Yes.
Holy shit.
With an average of 4.6, so about 4 to 5 victims each one.
And you, in order to be classified as a serial killer,
you have to kill 3 or more people.
At least 3 or more.
Damn.
Yes.
That's crazy.
California has the highest streak of serial killers with, to this date of 2021, of 1,628. And then the lowest. Who wants to guess is the lowest state?
Oh, you told me.
Yeah.
Hawaii.
No, close. That's the second one.
Well, Hawaii has 10.
Yes. Hawaii only has 10 serial killers. That's still quite a bit
for an island.
Yes. It has 10 serial killers.
Rhode Island.
No. Rhode Island is actually not pretty high, but it's there. Joe, do you have a guess?
Alaska.
I didn't even think about Alaska.
Actually, no. Alaska is kind of like in the middle. It's a middle child.
It's the atmosphere.
It's South Dakota.
South? See, that's only so random.
7.
That's so random.
Yes, South Dakota, then followed by Hawaii and New Hampshire at 10. The second most popular state. Do you guys remember what I said?
Florida.
No.
Texas?
Texas with 893.
Man, dude, California just
beats the competition. And then it's followed by Florida with 845.
Kelly's like, what you got, 800?
Talk to me when you guys reach the thousands, okay?
Then you'll be in my league.
Right. And then followed by Illinois with 629.
We are moving to South Dakota. All right.
New York has 628. Pennsylvania, Georgia. Mm-hmm. So there you go. There you have it. So yeah, what do you think of
John Wayne Gacy? I think he
John Wayne
totally destroys the name John Wayne.
Anyway, so yeah, that's John Wayne Gacy. Because if
their boys, they would have ended up, you know, underneath his crawl space.
But that also really makes you think. He had a son.
Yeah, he did.
Like,
I thought he had a daughter too.
He had a daughter. He had a boy and a girl.
Yeah.
But you also have to think back in the times, back in the days.
It was expected.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was expected of you to do so.
Yeah. So.
Whole white picket fence, American dream type of deal.
It was kind of a normal thing back in the day, unfortunately. Alrighty, so that was John Wayne Gacy. Hope you guys enjoyed that.
I sure did.
It was kind of fun to listen to and very annoying at the same time. Yep. Know that he got away with so much.
He did. He got away for too long. And if he actually did his actual, the right amount of sentence during his first trial when he went after that 15-year-old boy, a lot of this could have been prevented. So, that's just another way the justice system is stupid. Anything else you guys want to add?
No. Not much to add.
Good. Except for Athena barking in the background.
My dog just wanted to say hi.
Very loudly.
Very loudly. Alrighty. So, thank you guys for listening to another episode of Tea Time Horror Stories. I guys hope you enjoy that. Stay tuned for next week. We have another episode for you guys. It is not a murder, so it will be me and Joe covering something on the scarier side of the supernatural side.
Myth.
Paranormal, I think.
Yeah, myth.
Yep. So, I hope you guys enjoyed that. Have a good day. Stay spooky, y'all.
Happy hunting. Haunting.
I don't know my catchphrase.
He'll think of one eventually and he'll join us among that. So, be safe out there. Join us.